Blog Talk Radio.
Like a small boat in the ocean, sending big waves into motion, like how a single word can make a heart open. I might only have one match, but I can make an explosion. And all those things I didn't say, wrecking balls inside my brain, I will scream them loud tonight. Can you hear my voice this time? This is my fight song. Take back my life song. Prove I'm alright song. My powers turn on to stutter right now. I'll be strong. I'll play my fight song. And I don't really care if nobody else believes, cause I've still got a lot of fire left in me. Losing friends and I'm chasing sleep. Everybody's worried about me. In too deep, say I'm in too deep.
I'm in too deep.
It's been 2 years, I miss my home. There's a fire burning in my bones. I still believe, I still believe. And all of those things I didn't say, wrecking balls inside my brain, I will scream them loud tonight. Can you hear my voice this time? This is my fight song. Take back my life song. Prove I'm alright song. My powers turn on starting right now. I'll be strong. I play my fight song. And I don't really care if nobody else believes, cause I've still got a lot of fire left in me. Like a small boat on the ocean, sending big waves into motion, like how a single word can make a heart open. I might only have one match. This is my fight song. Take back my life song.
How's everybody doing today? This is Dive Girl Deb. Today is going to be a really fun show. I'm very excited about this, as many people are starting to learn that bee venom therapy is used to treat so many conditions. We know that it's helpful in killing bacteria, viruses, and parasites. It's one of the first, real benefits I feel is that it balances your hormones and that corrects a lot of the body systems right off the bat. So today's show is going to be about, we have some kind of mid-range patients that have been doing all their back stings. They've been following our written protocol on how to do this properly. And during that written protocol, which we all abide by, we want to, sting the back about 1 inch off of the spine, up and down, and at least 40 stings over a 2 month period, and that'll build up your immune system. The back's a nice large area so that it can expand and it's not too terribly painful. This also dumps the venom right into our nervous pathways and helps us to heal really quickly that way as well. So now if a patient has done those back stings and they're doing really great and they want to move out to their extremities, now we know a lot of arthritis occupies the space in our, like our hip joints and our knees and our elbows and our shoulder joints and that. And we can sting those areas specifically and help treat some of those nests and build up of pathogens. So today we have our lovely dear Amber Rose, who has joined us. She's back from being gone for about a month. And today she's going to help guide our conversation about how to do this properly and what some of her secret techniques are to start working on the extremities and what you can expect. So with that being said, hi, Amber. How are you doing, honey?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
I'm really happy to have you coming out today. And we also want to mention that Amber has started her own Facebook group. It's called Pioneers Healing Lyme with Bee Venom Therapy. And it's the latest rage on the web. And you can talk to Amber there. And I steal a lot of her information from my groups too, which is really great because we get all that information out there. But Amber, tell us a little bit about your new site, if you would.
Sure. Well, the title, Pioneers, and then there's a colon. So it's almost like a subtitle, Healing Lyme with Bee Venom Therapy. I feel like we're all pioneers, even though I have been stinging people for 22 years, and myself, of course, but when you sting yourself, you're taking your health into your own hands. And to me, that's like being a maverick or a pioneer. It's like, you know, uncharted territory because every patient is different. And so each of us has to find our own way. And that journey, you know, you're a pioneer on that journey. Now, we have just a slight glitch in that at the moment when you type in the name, it comes up as a secret group with only two members. So I would advise you to just go ahead and click on that, and then it'll lead you to the closed group with, I think it says 300-something members, but we have over 400 now. But if you click on the closed group, then it should bring you there. So I'm very excited about it, and it hasn't even been open for a week, you know, and we have 400-some-odd members, so it's pretty exciting. And I'm really happy to be here to guide people because I have a special protocol for stinging the extremities. And
great.
The first thing I want to say, I'm sorry, Deb.
Go ahead, honey. Really.
Okay. The first thing I want to say is that I do not jump from the spine like to the hands or fingers or legs or toes, all in one giant leap, you know? I like to creep down the limb that you want to go to. So if you want to go to, let's say, your elbow, like I would start at the shoulder, and I would very slowly go a few inches at a time, you know, just do one testing a couple of inches down from the shoulder, or you could start at the top of the shoulder, do a testing along with your spine stings, and then the next session, go a little lower. But everything is a testing because we're just trying to get the body used to the venom. And if you're just wanting to get to the elbow, then it's not going to take that long. And once you sting the elbow one time with a testing and your body, your arm is getting used to that venom and it's not blowing up and you're not, you know, herxing a lot or you're not having, you know, a lot of trouble, and you want to continue, then once you've done the elbow with a testing, the next session you could do a full sting. But if you're feeling a little scared, you could do 5 minute sting or a 10 minute sting. But if you're just feeling really courageous and everything's going well, you could do the full 20 minutes. So that's how I would start to get to the elbow.
I think that's a great idea on that kind of inching your way down. It seems to me that when you go into a new area that you have large colonies that are established and built up and they almost have like a structure, like a multi high-rise apartment building, and you have all these pathogens living in there and the venom comes along and it just is kind of like, you know, it's like an airplane flying into the World Trade Center. It just explodes and collapses, and all that structure and debris goes away. The pathogens go away. But you do get a big response.
Yes, you do. And that's why if you do testings, you get the body used to the venom slowly as you go down the limb and the extremity that you're wanting to go to. Now, I'm just, for right now, I'm only really going to talk about the arms and legs, hands and feet, you know. I'm not going to raise the neck right at this moment because I'm more comfortable even going to the shoulder than I am to the neck really early, you know, and the head. I'm not really big on neck or head stings really early. So, but a shoulder sting is, you know, on the trunk of the body. So it really isn't, you know, that far off the protocol. I mean, it's away from the spine, but it's not the neck, you know.
Right.
So,
it's still part of that main part. It's below your cervical region and above
right.
your lumbar area. So that's considered the main trunk of the body.
Correct. Correct. That's absolutely true. So if for some reason your goal wasn't to get to the elbow, but your goal was to get to the wrist or the hand or the fingers, you just keep on going with the testings. You don't like stay at the elbow for three times or something with a real sting or a testing. You just do it once there. And then on the next session, you would go to the forearm a couple inches down from the elbow. And I call it creeping. You know, it's almost like creeping ivy. It sort of creeps up the side of your house. By the way, mm-hmm. I love your image, you know, about, you know, the building and collapsing and everything. Although, you know, September 11th is, you know, not the, and it's coming up, it's not the easiest topic to talk about, but, you know, Lyme is really, you know, tough to treat. So, you know, we have to really think about how we can make, you know, get in there and make a difference. So, but if your goal is to go to the wrist, you're going to keep going past your elbow, still creeping with testings. And then I would stay at the wrist with testings for like a couple of times and just see how you do. And I would definitely take off all your rings in advance, mm-hmm. you know, because we don't know if the hand
right.
is going to... Your rings,
yeah.
your watch, and any bracelets that you wear on a regular, everyday basis. So I would take those off and just kind of see how you do, because you might have, you know, trouble getting them off if you swell.
Right,
so,
and then you might be faced with the bad decision of having to cut it off to prevent damage to your body because it needs to swell.
Mhm. I would say that the worst place to be stung, in my opinion, other than the head and the neck, you know, if leaving that out, really is the fingers and the toes, because there's no place for the venom to swell, you know, because, you know, the fingers are so skinny, you know. And so
right.
when it tries to expand, even if you sting your palm, your fingers may swell. And I mentioned in several places that I had gotten 5 accidental bee stings when cleaning out an old hive from dead bees, because even dead bees can still sting you if their stinger is intact. And I couldn't drive for a week. I couldn't hold the steering wheel with that hand.
Wow. Wow.
You know, so it's really, I mean, and that was on the palm, but it just spread. You see, if you sting on the palm, it'll spread to the fingers. But if you sting on the fingers, it doesn't necessarily go backwards. So it's kind of like that venom is like inside the fingers and it's swelling, and it's very painful, that swelling, because it's, you know, it's such a skinny area. But
I think it kind of almost goes and like hypersaturates the tissues with venom because they're so dense. Like you say, it can't go anywhere. And so all the venom just really saturates the fingers. And I think that's part of why they blow up and kind of get stagnant with venom.
Yes. And also the hands and the feet on the extremities are as far as you can get away from the heart. And the heart is,
mm-hmm.
you know, pumping the blood, and the heart is involved with circulation. So if you the further you sting away from the heart, the harder it is, you know, for the venom to circulate. So and if you have bad circulation to begin with, you know, you're at a handicap. So that's another reason that the venom pools there.
Right.
You know, and on the toes.
Well, one of the things that I like to do with my bee venom is dry skin brushing. And you can buy a dry skin brush for about $12 on Amazon.com. And if you, there's videos on how to do it, but essentially you're going to sweep from your fingertips up your shoulder towards your heart, from your toes up your legs towards your heart, from your head down your neck towards your heart, and that gets your lymph system flowing. And it's very effective. And it's part of what I think all of us need to have as part of our detox protocol. And if you ever get, you know, stung someplace that's new and you have a herx, boy, your lymph system is going to get hammered to help clear it. And, you know, apple cider vinegar and some dry skin brushing, like even every hour, will help you through those tough bits.
And some people notice that they get like a lymph node sort of pops up out of the blue. And it's a little scary to them. And what I say is that the lymph system is part of the body's natural detox system. So what's happening is it's on overload, you know, when you're doing bee venom therapy, not because of the bees, not because of the venom, but because the venom is killing spirochetes or the pathogens, bacteria, the parasites, the fungus, you know, whatever is going on in there. And so your lymph system is totally overloaded. And you might just have a lymph node pop up, you know, mm-hmm. under your arm, by your neck, or on your shoulder, or something like that. And
well,
thinking,
and the thing that happens almost next in that series too is that it's like you start getting these waxy balls and protrusions that come out of like the drainage pipes. Think about a gutter system on your house that collects all that rain fluid and it goes down the pipe and it has to exit somewhere. Well, you have these little ports in your skin and where the lymph system drains out, and you'll get these waxy buildups that'll start to emerge. And it's almost like the venom goes in there and cleans out the clogs and helps that start to flow again.
It sounds like Drano.
You know? It is. It's Roto-Rooter for the lymph system.
Yeah,
it's great.
It is. And what's kind of neat is that the melanin that's in the bee venom actually can get to the spirochetes that have been hiding out, you know. So, you know, that's going to create herxing even more than just, you know, the spirochetes that might be, you know, just free floating around. But you have to, we really, to get all the spirochetes, to kill them all over the 2 to 3 year period of time, we have to be able to get into those tough places. Like I've heard you, Deb, call them nests, you know?
Right.
There might be other names for them too, you know, or cysts or things like that. But it's like we have to get them out of hiding, you know? We have to, and it's a manipulative thing that we're doing. You know, we're manipulating the body to become whole. So the body has to go down and break down the bee venom. And it's sort of an afterthought. The body goes, oh, okay, as long as I'm doing that, I may as well clean this up too, you know? So,
yeah.
But it's,
I started calling it immune system training. Is that, you know, we're going to send your immune system to boot camp and we're going to put it in good shape and it's going to come out a lean, mean fighting machine. And I just think our, you know, that's why we have our fight song, is because this gives us a fighting chance. Once we train our immune system to go back to work and clean up all these old messes, boy, we're going to feel really good.
Right, right. And it's important, the concept of the immune system is like an inner physician. Like we have a doctor inside us, and it's called the immune system, but it's gone to sleep. Like Rip Van Winkle, you know, so the bee venom wakes up, you know, and if we keep doing it 3 times a week, it does not allow that, you know, inner physician to go back to sleep, because the tendency is to go like, I'll just take a nap, you know, and instead, you know, the bee venom is like forcing it to stay awake, you know, so
right.
That's the goal.
it's one of the most amazing therapies that I've done. I know that I've continued to steam myself, and I'm just about ready to surpass 1,000 stings. And I'm kind of thinking I might do a video to show everybody when I do my number 1,000. And I, of course, I'm saving up all my stingers in a little vial that I think I'll put on a nice necklace and I can wear when I go talk to people.
That's really great. Actually, when I go talk to people, I bring all my unexpired EpiPens to show them I've never used one.
Oh, that's great.
Because for 2 years, I've never used an EpiPen because I'm really cautious. I'm overly cautious. Yeah, I'd rather err on the side of being careful and not have anybody go into anaphylactic shock. So
let's talk about shock really quick. And, you know, the protocol is set up the way that it is because we're trying to prevent a shock response. And we push vitamin C as a requirement of at least 3,000 milligrams a day. And we like to see that in at least three different doses throughout the day. So you take, you know, 1,000 milligrams in the morning, afternoon, and evening. You know, I tend to double or triple that number myself because I don't detox well. But tell us why vitamin C is so important.
Well, when you get stung by a honeybee, the adrenal glands are forced to make cortisol. I'm not going to go into the whole long description of why it, because it's complicated, but to keep it simple, when you're stung by a honeybee, your adrenals like literally get the push to make cortisol. Now, one of the raw ingredients to make the cortisol is vitamin C. So if you don't have enough vitamin C in your body, your adrenal glands are freaking out. They're trying to make the vitamin C, sorry, the cortisol, and they can't make it. So it's like you're asking the body to make something that it cannot make. And that's why people go into a cyst reaction. It might not go all the way to anaphylactic shock, but it might be like they get hives or they get what we call five-palm heat, which is hands, feet, chest, and then an itchy scalp. Or you get some kind of, you know, unusual reaction. And that's when we use the Benadryl. We use 4 ounces of Benadryl. You can drink it straight out of the bottle. If you have an 8-ounce bottle, then you drink half. And you wait 30 to 45 seconds. And if you're having trouble, if you just have the hives, I'm not as worried about that. It's the anaphylactic shock, is the tongue swelling, the throat swelling, and difficulty breathing. Now, that liquid children's Benadryl is what we use because it has no alcohol. If you can get dye-free, that's even better. You might want to keep some extra bottles of that because I've heard of cases where hives returned like 15 minutes later and they didn't have any more Benadryl, you know? And you can have some extra Benadryl capsules if you need to. But I usually only use the EpiPen if someone's having trouble breathing or their throat is closing up, their tongue is swelling, and, you know, they can't breathe. That's when I use the EpiPen. But the reason that I believe that the body is going into anaphylactic shock or a systemic reaction, an immediate systemic reaction, okay, is that you don't have enough vitamin C, and the adrenal glands can't make the cortisol. And so, therefore, they're in a bond. It's like a catch-22. You're asking them to do something they cannot do. And so they have to get your attention. And your attention.
It seems like just about every time we have a patient that has some kind of a moderate adverse response like that, when we sit down and talk to them and say, when's the last time you were taking vitamin C? It's that they weren't, or they were taking too little. You know, maybe they took their one dose, 1,000 milligrams that day, but they didn't take the other two. And that's what got them into trouble. So this is really important that people stay with the 3,000 milligrams a day.
The other thing is alcohol. I do not recommend having any alcohol, drinking any alcohol, let's say beer or wine or whatever, 24 hours before stings and 24 hours after stings. You are more likely to have an anaphylactic reaction or a systemic reaction. Also, if you just, as long as we're on the topic of alcohol, it's a little off topic, but if you, like, if you wipe your skin right before you sting because you think you're trying to be sterile or something, and then you wipe your arm with alcohol and then you sting your arm, you just nullified the venom. Because when alcohol is used on the skin and then you sting right there, or you do it afterwards, then it really nullifies the venom. It's possible that it nullifies the venom if you drink it too before stinging. But my main concern is the anaphylactic reaction or some kind of a huge systemic reaction that's you know, not the end of the world, not life-threatening, but it's the hive and that kind of
right.
thing.
Well, generally, it's just a good idea to just follow the protocol. I mean, it's, you know, I know people want to have a good time. You know, if you know you're going to go to a barbecue that day, then just don't sting. Skip some days and give your body a break and go be bad and then get it out of your system and get back to your sting schedule. So one of the things that we want to talk about too is like stinging our legs. And I know me personally, yeah. I had really bad neuropathy in my right leg. I've had restless leg syndrome for years. I mean, decades and years. And I started a series of stings working down my leg. And primarily I love like stinging my heels and the base of my foot on about, if you're standing up on the floor, about half an inch off of the floor, where that skin goes from a dark pink, like on the sole of your foot, to the lighter skin color. I kind of like that area and up around the ankle because it's really helped me with my neuropathy.
That's a great idea. We just want to make sure as people go from their spine sting, they don't just jump to the ankles, which I've heard of some people doing and then regretting it. And I learned very quickly myself, I stung someone's, she begged me to sting her ankles, and she had never been stung before, and she just told me she had arthritis, and this was in my early days, and she stung on her her ankles, and she didn't tell me she was about to go on a trip to Hawaii. So
uh-oh.
After I stung her, she walked around the room, she felt great, she was very happy, and then she went off, and she drove to the airport and got on a plane to go to Hawaii. Now, she weighed about 300 pounds, so then her legs were dangling in that airplane seat, and she developed cellulitis. So, you know, I learned an experience from that I never go to the extremities before, especially if it's Lyme. I don't go before 2 or 3 months, but you know, with anybody, I make sure that their body's used to it on the spine area first, you know, whether it's mid or low back or upper back, but not too high. And then I creep my way down the leg. So let's say, if I'm up to, let's say, even 8 stings or 10 stings or whatever, I might then just do, I might add a testing on the thigh, like the upper thigh. And then maybe the next session, I might add a testing, not where it's red. You don't want to sting where it's already red. I might add, you know, another testing to your regular spine stings, and I go a few inches lower. And if you want to get to your knee, then you can do the testing there, find a sore spot and do the testing. And if you do all right with it and you tolerate it well, then the next session you could do a full sting there. But if you want to keep going to what you were just saying, Deb, about going down to the ankle, I would when once you start going to the calf, you're getting further and further away from the heart. So I would go really slowly, creeping with testings, like a few inches at a time. But I wouldn't, let's say, do 3 testings on one session. I would just do 1 testing and the rest on my spine, you know? Or if you're going to do the hips or something, you know, or their shoulder, that's fine too. But, you know, when it comes to extremities, I would only do 1 test at a time per session. And then when you finally get, you know, to the ankles, to wherever it is you want to go, and you do the testing, like exactly where you were describing, sounds like almost like the Achilles tendon, and that area is the bladder meridian in Chinese medicine. You know, if you want to sting that ankle area and you get there with testings and it's not totally blowing up and, you know, you're tolerating it well, then you can do a real sting after the testing was successful. Now, this is just my protocol. It doesn't have to be anybody else's. This is just the way I do it because I'm cautious, you know?
Right. I think that it's important to be cautious and to go slowly because we don't always know how a patient is going to respond when they go into one of these new areas. I had a patient locally that we'd worked on their back for, you know, a good while, a couple of months, and was detoxing really well and just kept having this really bad pain in the knee area and said, please, can I just sting it? Please, can I just sting it? And I'm like, well, sure, just do it then. I mean, if it feels right to you, do it. And boy, it blew up and the person hurts really, really badly for like 3 days and got really sick from it. So this idea of creeping down and migrating, just, you know, testings down and working your way down to your project area is great. And I love that idea. So it'll help you to make sure that your body adjusts to this pretty easily and that you detox well and you don't have a massive herx, which is going to make you sick.
One of the things that you just said triggered something for me. You said that this person was like begging you or really wanting to go to a certain place. And when referring back to the lady who flew to Hawaii, she was begging me. And after she got the cellulitis in both legs, when I did just one sting on each ankle, you know, but it was her first stings. And basically, I made a decision that I'm not going to let people tell me where they want to be stung. I'll listen to the story. And if they're really still in the mode of stinging the spine, if they're within that, you know, 2 or 3 month window when they're supposed to be stinging the spine, you know, I don't tend to venture out unless I do a testing. You know what I'm saying? And I mm-hmm. kind of, people try to push the envelope sometime and say, well, if I do a testing and it's okay, 30 minutes later, can I do a real one? And I'll say no, you know,
right.
Because I say yes, you know, if somebody wants to do something, because I want everything to be safe. I'm looking for safety. I want to give people hope. But some people, not everybody, and probably not the people listening to this who are really committed, but some people will give up if they have such a big reaction, or they'll take a break and then have to, you know, like for 3 or 4 months or something and then start again. But I don't want people giving up. And that's why I do the creeping slowly with testings, so the extremity, the arm or the leg, gets used to it before, especially if I know I want to get to the wrist or the hand or the fingers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
At a certain point down the road, when I've gotten to the fingers and the swelling part is over and or they didn't have a strong reaction, especially I had a woman with arthritis, and I mean, every time she came, I stung her fingers, you know, but we started with the spine. So, and then I crept my way down. So I think it's just.
Well, one of the things that I did is once I finally got into that area is that I went and, you know, I knew I'd done my testing and I did my first full sting and I let it rest for about a week. And I came back and would maybe sting that area two times. And then over a period of months, I would build up my total number of stings. And I'm in sessions now where I can sting just my leg, you know, 10 times and really deep treat myself. So it just takes time that you build up gradually over time. Do you have any suggestions on how you like to see that?
Well, I think you said it just fine, that as long as people start on the spine area and they have to figure out, some people don't like the low back and other people love it, you know. Some people like the upper or mid back, so everybody's different. But we don't want to go to the neck or the head. And if at some point we were going to go to the neck, I know some people who waited 6 months before they went to the neck and the head. Again, when you go to a new area, it's generally going to get red and swell. You know, so doing testings when you go to new areas, no matter where they are, is safe. But I love the fact that you're doing deep treatments where you feel like, I'm going to focus on my legs today. And that's
right.
My goal. And you can do all your stings on your legs. But, you know, you've been doing this, what, about 9 months or is it more?
It's about 10, about a little over 10 months now. And, you know, my neuropathy in my right leg is, gosh, you know, I keep increasing the percentage of healing. I think I'm probably like 96% healed right now on that leg from the neuropathy. I've done probably 20 sting sessions there. Some of them are really pretty intense. And, you know, I also, you know, I'm getting out and I'm doing some activities a little more, and I'll go out and I'll garden a little bit and I'll be sore. And then I'll come in my next regular session and I'll sting those sore spots. And it does two things for me, because my legs are already built up, but what it does for me is it instantly, I have pain relief. So the sore stops being sore. And then which of course, you know, brings in new blood flow, but it just like stops whatever that ache is and problems that's going on right there. And it's amazing. You know, you get the energy from the bee to go out and do something, and then you still get a little sore from it, which is kind of your body rebuilding itself. And, you know, then the venom comes in and helps to heal that part, you know, from the stress, and it provides the pain relief, which is really great.
It's fantastic, actually. I honestly, you know, I'm an acupuncturist, and I feel like the bees are so much more powerful than acupuncture. And I love being an acupuncturist, but the bees are way more powerful, you know. So what I learned over time when I was first starting, that I had some MS patients coming to me, and maybe they were, you know, late stage Lyme, I don't really know. But when I had my free clinic, you know, I was mostly seeing MS patients because they were the ones hearing about the treatment at the time, 22 years ago. But in my acupuncture practice, I had all these MS patients, and no matter what I did with the acupuncture, I just felt like I should return their money. It's like I felt like I wasn't helping them. I wasn't doing anything.
Right.
And I call doing bee venom therapy like bringing out the big guns. You know, it's like, and if you sting on acupuncture points, if you can find them on the internet, you know, or you just happen to hit on one, it's like a friend of mine used to call it bee venom therapy with a bang. You know, because there's certain areas, but also, like you said, hot spots or sore spots, those are acupuncture points too. We call them ashi points. Ashi points are like trigger points, hot spots, places where you hurt. And it might just be like stagnation, you know? It might be a sore muscle because you went kayaking this week. You know what I'm saying?
I totally know what you're talking about. And I have this little acupuncture mannequin that I bought on eBay. It cost me like $17, and I think it's 11 inches tall, and it has basically a human body, and it has all the meridian lines and the acupressure points, and it's laid out beautifully. And I love this little device. It, you know, it's 3D, which is kind of neat because you can turn it and move it around and look at the body and then you find a sore spot on you, and then you look on here, and darn if there isn't a point right there. So that tells you that you're really intuitively, you're on the right track. So go ahead and hit it. You know, when you talked a little bit about some people don't like the low back and the lumbar area, you know, I understand why, because I, in my experience, you know, the hip area contains so many pathogens, and it seems like that's a source for a lot of viruses. So I've personally, you know, I have chronic fatigue and cytomegalovirus and Epstein-Barr. I have all the terrible co-infections that are viral. So I've gone in there and stung that extensively, but I did start off really small. You're probably going to have a new patient that if you do a testing down there, they're going to herks. And the next time that they do, you know, maybe a 5 minute sting, they might herks then too. And I would just say, you know, keep building up. It's a gold mine for knocking out viruses, but keep after it, blast away, keep going in there and hammering it. I've also done this bit where I'll sting in my lumbar area, and then I'll come around to the front of me on my abdomen, and about 1 inch from my abdomen center line, I'll sting. So I have the same horizontal line, and I kind of feed that same nerve bundle from the front and the back. And I've gotten some really good viral responses. It's been kind of neat.
That's great. Oh, as long as we're talking about good places to sting, we should mention scars. You know, you might have done a show on that already. But you can sting scars directly on the scar, but you can sting like surrounding it. I call it surrounding the dragon. And then also you want to, you know, if you have an acupuncture chart or something, you look to see if the scar is, you know, was cutting across several acupuncture pathways. You need to sting above and below that scar so the energy starts flowing, because scars block energy. So
we did do a show on scars and talked about it. I think you're in your conference, so we didn't have you able to attend, but I agree. I think the scars do block the energy, and I personally have stung scars. I have one on my left forearm that was, you know, avocado sized, and I've stung it about 8 different times in sessions that I built up, and that's like dissipated down to like a pea size now. I also have a fusion in my low back because, you know, as a late stage Lyme, I have degeneration of my discs, and I've stung near all that hardware that's inside of me. Now, I know from a lot of research that I've looked at as far as surgical implant devices that mycoplasms love to live on the surface of surgical implants. And one of the things that the bee venom will do is to go in there, it'll dissolve the scar tissue and get those fluids moving better in that old area. It'll help to heal some of the old damage, and it'll kind of tune up that old injury area and open it up and getting it to flow again. But you're going to knock down all those mycoplasms, and those little bugs will leach toxins into your system and make you feel sick. So stinging near those surgical locations is a great idea. I've done it extensively, and I highly encourage people to do it.
I would say that remember that the detox protocol is just as important as the bee sting. Because when you're talking about stinging places that might produce a herpes or might, you know, kill a lot of pathogens, we want to make sure that the next day, you know, that people are really doing their detox. So I try to say that it's just as important, because I have heard people say, well, I've been a little sluggish on my detox. I sort of skipped a few days, or, you know, maybe I was camping or something, and I couldn't actually get to, you know, a bathtub or something like that. But you can still drink the apple cider vinegar, you know, and you can still drink plenty of water. But the detox is really equal. I mean, well, I shouldn't say that, but it's just the bee venom is so powerful that you really do need the detox protocol to make it all flow and work. Because otherwise you're just going to maybe really just not feel well. and you'll have more trouble, you know, getting anything out of the system that's dying off. So that's why we have that detox protocol in there.
I totally agree with you, Amber. I think detox is essential. And I, if you think about, you know, if you have a funnel, like you're pouring water into an old wine bottle, you can't pour it any faster than it can come out of the bottom of the hole. It's just, that's its limiting factor. And your HERX response and your detox is your, is that hole in the bottom of the funnel. Doesn't matter how much, you know, junk you put in the top, that's all it's going to come out. So we have to make sure that those detox pathways are fully open all the time. One of my favorite things that I do every single day is I drink out of a mason jar, and I like drinking out of a mason jar because I know it's in, it's certified inert glass. There's not any toxins that's going to leach into my system. And I also have a known quantity. It's a 2-quart or a 4-cup jar. Now, we recommend that you drink like one cup of water for every 10 pounds of body weight every day. So that's, for me, going to drink 4 of these waters a day, which is 16 cups, so I'm about 165 pounds. And I personally add a full lemon to this bottle, and then I add a 1/4 teaspoon of Celtic sea salt. And if I don't have lemons, I'll add apple cider vinegar. I love apple cider vinegar. It's excellent for detox. And I drink that all day long. So that's my regular drink. So I think that, you know, you just make it as part of your lifestyle. And when you do that, then it's always there. You know, you're going to go somewhere, pack a canteen full of your water, you know, keep a canteen of your detox water in your vehicle in a mason jar, and it'll keep, it's not in plastic. So you can tote that around with you.
Sounds like a great idea. You know, it's part of the protocol, and it's part of the lifestyle, as you said. And you and I both know that for us, maybe other people may join us, that V-Venom therapy is part of my lifestyle. I'm going to do it for the rest of my life. I might not be doing 20 stings 3 times a week for the rest of my life, but I'm certainly going to be having beastly lifestyle.
Right. So. You and I are on the same page with that. I see this as a lifestyle for the rest of my life. It's kind of like a fountain of youth, in that it restores, you know, all these damages to the body and helps those to heal and you function better. Plus, we know that I've done the research and looked at the companion animal industry, where veterinaries or vets are reporting on the number of Lyme and other infections in the dog population. And there's literally a tsunami of Lyme disease about to envelop our country. It's been bad on the East Coast for decades now, but it's about to spread throughout the entire nation at that level. And it's actually headed right for the Pacific Northwest, where I live out here in Oregon, and also migrating south in states like Arizona and New Mexico, where their humidity is lower. They're going to expect to see Lyme too. So I just see bee venom as a means to, as cheap insurance to protect ourselves from these nasty pathogens. And it's just going to sustain health. Because, you know, like I was out kayaking, and I'm going to go out and do things. But if I get exposed to something, now I have a means to manage it. And bee venom is, it's easy. I'm growing it in the backyard. So, you know what? I don't need to be FDA approved to manage my own health care anymore. I can do it with my beehive.
Right. Your beehive is your insurance policy for staying well. And on that note, you know, I was doing bee venom therapy before I got Lyme the first time. So I was doing BVT for a whole year. And I had a free clinic for a whole year, and I was getting stung, et cetera. So then I got my tick bite, and it was embedded for like 2-3 days. And they definitely told me, you know, it was a Lyme tick. And I never got the bullseye rash. And, you know, the amazing thing is I really didn't, because I'd been doing bee venom and I had it in my system, and I had never stopped for that whole first year, those spirochetes did not have a chance. I mean, they just got because, and I kept doing it. But I didn't realize that I was purposely stinging for Lyme. I was just stinging because I was just scared that I just gotten bit by a Lyme tick. And I just figured, well, if it's working for MS, at that point I didn't really know that MS might be late stage Lyme. So I didn't know that at the time, but I figured it's like chicken soup. It can't hurt, you know? I just kept stinging 3 times a week, you know? And I never really had like a very bad reaction my first time in 1994, whereas I started stinging in 93. But when I got reinfected in 2006, I had just broken my spine the month before. And when I got my tick bite, I was wearing a back brace, and it was one of these Darth Vader kind of things that just goes all the way down, you know, like to your pubic area. And I got a tick bite, and it was like almost like underneath my my brace. And I got the bullseye rash, but I didn't really see it. And I was in so much pain from breaking my spine that I just wasn't focused on the fact that, oh, I have a bullseye rash. I better get it checked out. So, and then all of a sudden I started feeling this like a facial, not paralysis yet, but pain in my eyes were twitching. I had a terrible earache, like some of the cranial nerves, you know, I just felt like maybe it was, you know, just related somehow to the breaking my spine. I never thought that I had been reinfected. But, you know, all of a sudden, despite the fact that, you know, it was like maybe 3 days that I went with this terrible facial pain, on a Saturday morning of Labor Day weekend, you know, I woke up and my face had totally dropped. And I thought I had a stroke. And
right.
We went to the ER. And they said it wasn't a stroke, and they did, at that time, they were doing lumbar punctures, wow. Spinal taps, and that really hurt, but, ouch. But, anyway, they just said, you've got Lyme, and they saw that, you know, the bullseye rash was still there. So they admitted me into the hospital, and I basically got a PIC line for a week with antibiotics, and they told me I was going to have to go home and with the PIC line and do it myself because my insurance didn't cover it, a nurse. So I was going to have to learn to do it, and I was pretty sad. But the truth is, at that point, I couldn't talk. I couldn't swallow. I couldn't eat. I couldn't drink. So I was in pretty bad shape. The interesting thing is that my B shipment for 2 weeks in a row got mixed up because I didn't have a hive at that point. Because I was living in the woods and there were bears and we hadn't hooked up the electric fence yet and everything. So I was ordering bees by mail. And for some reason, you know, it was in the summertime and they all came and they were dead. And that particular company didn't replace them. So I thought, oh, you know, no big deal, whatever. Well, it was a mistake. Whatever was not good enough because then I had full-blown, it was like I went into full-blown Lyme within 3 days of that tick bite, you know, or approximately maybe a week, 3 days to a week. I'm not sure exactly when I got the tick bite, but so I had the antibiotics and they did absolutely nothing for me. Then they so after a whole week, they said, we're going to try a different approach. And they did solimedrol, which is normally a drug for MS, quote MS, but it's kind of like prednisone. It was a liquid kind of prednisone that they do a push in your arm, like a shot, in your IV or in your PIC line. And overnight, immediately, all the symptoms went away. So they said, oh, you don't have Lyme, you have MS. Although my diagnosis came back that I had Lyme, you know,
right.
They switched my diagnosis to MS. Because I responded, they were thinking because I responded to the solimedrol and the prednisone. But anyway, I went home, and I did continue the prednisone for a little while, and then I started stinging like 3 times a week. And that's when I started doing the detoxing. And, you know, within a very short period of time, I mean, the prednisone probably kept some of the symptoms really at bay, so I didn't really know mm-hmm. how well I was doing, but I was afraid to come off the prednisone, but I really believed in the bees. So, but with prednisone, it takes a very long time to come off it. So,
right, you have to taper off of that product. It has its place, but boy, it's really hard on the body. And it's really tough on Lyme patients to be on some of those synthetic hormones like that. They're just really, you know. So what have we not covered on the extremities? You know, I tend to think that following the meridian lines is great. I also like to find where the nerves run and sting those areas. I tend to get some really good responses when I sting near the nerves.
Sure.
So what are your experiences with that?
Excellent. I mean, the nerves are a very important part of the body, and especially if you have neuropathy, it's all about the nerves. You know, so either you're going to sting by the spine, you know, 1 inch out, you're going to sting there to the specific extremity that you want to reach, let's say the legs maybe. You can look up Gray's Anatomy online, or you can look up, you know, nerves in the legs on Google mm-hmm. or something. I mean, and you can really find where those nerve pathways are, and you can follow them. And sometimes your body will give you clues, like, if you go down your leg, sometimes I would say to a patient, I'm going to give you 3 choices, and you tell me which spot hurts the most. And then I would, you know, take the nerve area that I want you to focus on, and I would go press on one of them, and I'd say, this is 1, then go a little lower, 2, and then 3. Which one hurts the most? Because most people can handle deciding between 3 things. But if not, you could just do 2. And let them tell you which spot feels the most sore. Because then you're not only following either a meridian or a nerve pathway, but the patient feels like they're involved in helping you guide them. Well, obviously, if people are stinging themselves, they can just sort of press on their leg, you know, and following either the acupuncture pathway or a nerve pathway, and just see, oh my gosh, this area, I don't feel any pain at all. But if I press over here, there's so much pain. So that's where I'm going to go.
Now, I have a bunch of charts on the group. I Google them, and I find them everywhere and copy them and post them to the group. And I encourage other people to drop charts on the group wall, whether they're nerve charts or meridian lines, or, you know, if you find a good chart that you really like, put it up there and we'll share it. But there's lots of really good charts. The nerves to me are kind of like a super highway for the body. I have this vision of like the venom gets in the nerve pathways and it just runs like a solvent. And the more I go and hit the nerves, is that it goes in, it cleans out the old junk that makes those nerves behave better, and they kind of calm down and they stop having this reactive electrical impulse. I used to have that real creepy crawly feeling from the nerves just being raw and sore, and I don't have that anymore. And I've stopped all my gabapentin products for that. I don't take any medication for it anymore, because the healing is happening and the pathogens are dying. But nerves are really a bonus feature in my book, because I think you get a lot of bang for your buck if you can sting near a nervous pathway.
I totally agree. I couldn't agree more. It's like you're giving bee venom such an advantage by going to the nerves, you know, which is why mm-hmm. in part we start on the spine, because it gives the first month or two is like the body just getting used to the venom. But we specifically sting kind of close to the spine, not right next to it, but like an inch out, because we catch that nerve bundle, you know, as it's coming out. And so then it'll travel. And I've heard people say, I stung my spine and I felt it all the way down my arm. You know, they
yeah.
felt like not really an electrical feeling, but just like an energy feeling, just going all the way down their arm to their hands. And, you know, it really works. And bee venom is so magical. And if you give it, you know, like the easiest chance possible by stinging nerves or an acupuncture point or something that's really powerful, then, you know, you're making it even easier for the bee venom to work.
I couldn't agree more. I think that's absolutely true because the venom is going to go in there and do so many really neat things. And you're sending in a bunch of warriors to go have battle from these pathogens. And a lot of people, you know, they get kind of a little, I don't know, I call it bee twerking, where when you first sting yourself, you get that 30 to 90 seconds of that stinging sensation. And you kind of, you know, if you tap around that area, it'll kind of dissipate a bit, but it's just, you just kind of tweak for a little while, but then afterwards it all settles down and you can almost just feel these whole pathogens dying out as the fresh venom enters your system. It's just, it's one of the neatest sensations.
It is. It is. I know when I did my bladder stings, I know a lot of people have been asking, you know, about the bladder, and that's, I mean, there is a bladder pathway, which is the longest pathway in the body and goes down to, you know, the little toe, but, and, you know, starts by the eye. But bottom line is, if you want to, if you're at the beginning, after, let's say, the first month or so, or maybe month and a half, if you want to try to sting in the pubic hair, that's a really good, you know, one, you could try just even a test sting there and see how you do. And if you do okay, then maybe, you know, a session or two later, you could do a real sting in the hair. Mm-hmm. And I mean, those were my first two stings. Now, this was before I had Lyme, but I had this unbelievable 3-month bladder infection that was not responding to anything, antibiotics, etc. And within 5 hours, it was completely gone and has never returned. And it just felt so warm. It just was like this warm glow. After you feel that initial hot, spicy burn, but there's something about it where you just feel like it's like a warm, like almost like warm soup or something. It's just like a warm, like, or hot apple cider on a cold day or something. It's
right.
There's something warm about it. You did ask before, did we leave anything out? And I guess you could say that maybe the neck and the head are our extremities. So maybe I should just briefly touch on that. And then maybe
I think that's a great idea. Yeah.
Yeah. We could take questions after that. First of all, I don't go to the head before the neck. And so if I'm starting on the neck, I just start as low as I can go, like near cervical number 7, and I would do a testing. And then I would go, you know, maybe 2 sessions later, you know, maybe not the next session. You know, so you don't want to rush because it's not a race. You know, you're not going to get better faster if you do faster and more and rushing and all of that, you know, so you might hurt more because with the neck and the head, you tend to hurt a lot. So I would do a testing on C7, near C7, which is sort of that, you know, right above that big bump, you know, when you lean your head back and forth. And then I would just creep, like with the extremities, like maybe every 2 sessions, I would creep up by, you know, just do a testing, you know, add it to your other things, whatever else you're doing. And then just creep until you get to what we call the occiput, which is where the head meets the neck. So it's sort of like that. It's sort of a cradle that the skull, you know, that the brain sort of sits in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as I'm saying the brain, the blood-brain barrier is very important for Lyme because, and in bee venom, there is a very, there's a very small molecule of a peptide called apomin. Now, everybody talks about melanin, how it kills the spirochetes, but apomin gets through the blood-brain barrier. So that's a very important component in bee venom that is sort of ignored often. But anyway, so we're creeping up. And then if you want to try a real sting on your neck, I would only do one. But after you've done a few testings, now, again, it's similar to like doing a leg. Think of it as an extremity because you're, even though you might want to get to the head or something, you don't want to get there too fast because it might be too strong. So what you're going to do is you're going to pave the way by creeping with testings, and then eventually you'll try a real sting on the neck, somewhere on the neck, wherever you feel guided to sting. Maybe you have a sore spot or something, and see how you do with that one sting. But if at some point you're going to be doing your head, I would still creep. And there's actually an acupuncture point, acupuncture pathway, sorry, called the governor vessel or the dew vessel, dew meridian, and it goes all the way up the spine, right on the spine, you know, like in the middle of the spine where we normally don't sting. So when you're doing the neck, we're doing on either side. But when you're going on the head, you know, you want to follow, you're not really on the spine anymore, but you're wanting to follow that pathway, the dew meridian. You can probably see it on your mannequin there, your little doll. But
I was just sitting here looking at him as you were talking, and there's certainly a line that runs straight up. It comes down to the front of your head into where your hairline is, then it drops down actually to the bridge of your nose and to the middle of your upper lip and to your chin. So I know exactly what you're talking about, and I've stung that line. I've stung actually quite a few places on my neck and head, and that's a great line.
I would not recommend this, but actually the very last point on that meridian is inside the mouth. And I know some people have been doing things in their gums, but I don't tend to. So then the last point that I would do would probably be like between the nose and the lip. You know, that would be the last point on that pathway. And then the one you were seeing on the chin is the one that comes up from the perineum in the front mm-hmm. of the body, that the conception vessel and the Ren, and it's also called the Ren meridian, and it ends like just below the lower lip. So, but I mean, there's so many places to do, but that was the only thing I felt we maybe left out, was I hadn't really talked about the neck and the head, only because I don't like people to go there too early for a number of reasons. And, you know, it just, it's very strong. But I know that there are some people that want help with their eyes, and
right.
certain points like where your head meets your neck. And I'm talking even maybe 4 or 5 or 6 months from now, you know, after people start. Basically, there are some points, and people could send me a PM if they want to, or instant message or something. But one is gallbladder 20, and the other one is bladder 10. And you can probably see it on your little doll. But there are some points, like where the hair begins, you know, on a person, like, you know, like where the scalp of the hair begins. If you feel in there, there's some sore spots, and there are some spots there that are good for the eyes, and also gallbladder 1, which I don't know if you can see, but not by the bridge of the nose, but on your eye, if you go to the outer, like what we normally call the temples. You know, what we think when we have a temple headache or something. That's the first point on the gallbladder. And that is very good for, you know, blurry vision and eye problems. But
well, I've actually gone to that area. I used to have a lot of the floaters in my vision, and I had trouble focusing. And it almost felt like my eyes were becoming cloudy. And I think that I had so many of those darn spiral shapes in my eyes that I was actually seeing them, and it was difficult to go outside in the sun without sunglasses and a hat. And I started stinging some of that triliminal nerve, which is right in that area that you're talking about, and instantly the floaters went away. I mean, it just knocked them out. But I love some of your advice on stinging the head, but we really want to caution people that this is a very advanced form of stinging, and we're very conservative up here. I think what we'll do is a show down the road talking about neck and head stings and some people that are in the more advanced segment of doing that, where we can talk in detail. But you really can get some great relief by stinging the head. The other thing that really helped on me was that my cognition and my brain fog just about dissipated too. So this is a really great place to help with any kind of brain function.
Exactly. And remember again that apomin goes through the blood-brain barrier. So we're really getting in there. No matter where you sting, even if you're just stinging on the spine, don't think that you're not helping your brain. Because actually, in Chinese medicine, they thought the kidneys, the spine, and the brain were all one organ. So you're really stinging your brain when you're stinging. When you're going 1 inch out from the spine, you know, it's not a wasted sting if you think that you wish you go to your head, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And D-venom, this is an important concept. D-venom goes where it's needed most. So if somebody's like 4 to 6 weeks in or 8 weeks in and they said, I'm not noticing anything at all, except I'm just flexing like crazy. Well, that's good because it means it's not fun, of course, but it's good that you're herxing because that means that the bee venom's killing the spirochetes. I remember asking someone, well, are you getting red? Are you itching? Are you swelling? And they said, yes. And I said, so I know it's working, but maybe you can't feel it or see it on the exterior, you know, or in places that you want it, you know, let's say your neuropathy or somebody's cognition. But the bee venom will actually go where it's needed most. And let's say, you know, you have a broken bone, you know, that was from 15 years ago, and there's a scar there. Maybe that bee venom is going to heal that bone, and maybe you haven't noticed yet that your leg is feeling better yet, because maybe it's going to take another month. But you see what I'm saying? That the bee venom goes where it's needed most, so you might not at the beginning, you might get all these symptoms of herxing or flu-like symptoms or, you know, the redness, itching, swelling, but you feel that nothing's happening. But says to me, I mean, that is a reaction to the bee venom. So that to me means something is happening. You can't see it yet. And so it's really sometimes at the beginning, the first, you know, for any beginners listening, the first month or two is the toughest. And
it's
really important not to give up during that time, because it's like you might be 5 minutes away from your miracle, even though it doesn't seem like it. Because 3 days later, you might feel fantastic, you know, but you just don't know it yet. So it's almost like taking a leap of faith that this is going to work and that you're going to go ahead and follow it for 2 to 3 years and that you will feel progress, even if it's up and down, you know, even if you have what we call retracing, where you go through old ailments, you know, that if you've had something before and it's popping up again, it's probably retracing, not just herxing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, we've got a question here. Carrie Ann is logged on, and I want to just remind everybody that this is a live show. It's Blog Talk Radio, which means that people can call in and talk live on the show, and you can also blog on our wall live. And we have Carrie Ann, who has signed on with us, our darling. She's volunteered to help take over the Sting Buddies Club and get that organized for us, and she's doing a great job. So I'd like to encourage everybody to keep working with her, and we're going to build that list out. Now, she's been stinging her knees, and she's positive that she has Lyme there. She said her pain has subsided greatly, but she's now experiencing some burning. She's done micro stings and stung around the knee 3 or 4 times, and last time she stung it directly on top. So she's really yet to have any kind of reaction. So she's wondering, you know, what she should do at this point. Only do one sting each time. Should she increase stings to the knee? She thinks it's odd that she's not having any kind of reaction. She does have some problems in the knee where she apparently doesn't have enough cartilage, and she's got bone on bone rubbing. And that's got to be painful. But I think in terms, I mean, I'm just going to answer and then we'll get Amber in here. But I would continue, as long as you're detoxing, to keep building up your number of stings in that area. I would try to feed the nerves that go into that area and the meridian lines. And actually, you know, I would think you could build up to even 6 or 8 stings per session on that knee, because you know it's a really serious spot and you want a lot of pain relief. And with and just kind of saturate it with the venom, and you're going to get the best results that way. But you're going to want to build up really slowly. What do you think, Amber? What would you advise her?
Well, I'm a little confused because she said that she's having no reaction. Does that mean no redness, no itching, no swelling too, or just no pain relief?
Well, she is having pain relief, but now she's got a burning sensation.
But is she having any redness, itching, and swelling?
Hold on. She said, she's writing back. She said, correct. She says, nothing, no response. So.
Okay. That means that the immune system, in you know, that goes to that area has not woken up yet. So if you have no redness, no itching, no swelling, that means, you know, that you really have to wake up the inner physician, you know, that goes down to the knee. So, yeah, I would follow Deb's advice. And I realize that she has burning, but I would take out the big guns and I would do, you know, I don't know how many she's doing right now, how many stings she's doing right now on the knee.
I think she's doing one sting per session, and she's done 3 or 4 sessions. So I think she's just in the beginning of treating that area. So it seems to me like she needs to step up the number of stings.
Yeah. Are they? Is it a real sting or a test sting?
She did a test sting initially, but then the remaining ones were full stings.
Okay. Then I would increase the number of stings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and get in there, just blast the heck out of that area, and your immune system will wake up, and but just keep hammering away at it.
Yeah, keep going until you have to get that red itching and swelling going there, because otherwise the body's not recognizing the bee venom as a foreign protein.
Right. So I want to switch gears a little bit. We have about 10 minutes left on the show. I want to talk about some upcoming events, and we can talk about this briefly, but you know, the ID Week is coming up in October down in San Diego, California, and the Mayday Project has their big protest during ID Week going on. I believe it starts near October 8th and runs a couple, 3 days, so you want to check out the Mayday's wall for that. I'm going to go down for that. I'm going to drive down, and I'm going to hold a bee school for Lymies down there right before the event, or maybe right after it. I'll work with the Mayday people so that we don't have any kind of timing conflict, but there's going to be a bee school for Lymies where I will bring my bee education stuff, and I'll sting myself live just like I did in the one in Virginia. And then also coming up during Thanksgiving break in New York City, we're going to do another bee school for Lymies. And my dear friend Rory is going to host me to come out there and meet all the lovely people on the East Coast. Amber lives in that neck of the woods, and she's volunteered to come help us. And I think that's phenomenal. So we're going to have a bee school for Lymies in New York, where we're going to sit down with people. Once again, it'll be hands-on approach. And these are set up under events with Flip and Lyme right now. So that one, we don't have an exact date and time yet. So if you'll stay tuned, you'll learn about that. And then later, during Christmas time, Amber's going to be in the Portland, Oregon area. And I'm going to, of course, try to connect with her and maybe kidnap her to come stay in my mermaid guest bedroom for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to have some kind of something that we'll pull together in the area. At the very least, I'm going to host a dinner and all the local patients in the area can come over and have a nice meal and sit down and get to meet Amber Rose, and we can talk about bee venom. So some things to look forward to, and there's a lot of ways to learn about bee venom therapy. So
that sounds terrific.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun. This is going to grow, and you know, I want our community to heal. We're going to become better advocates for the bee and for Lyme patients. And if you know a friend that's got fibromyalgia or MS or some of these other immunity illnesses, you know, my theory is, like, let's stop having the argument that we have to prove that you have Lyme. We know that patient is sick and that they would benefit from bee venom. So my idea is, like, let's just say, yeah, you're sick and you have these symptoms. We know bee venom can help you with that. And get them to join the group, get them to watch the videos on YouTube, get them to listen to the radio shows, join all the Facebook groups, read the protocol, and get them involved in the community. And then later, you know, they might say, well, how come this works so well? And then we can explain to them that they had undiagnosed pathogens, and that's why the venom works. And at the end of the day, this is about helping patients heal and resolve their symptoms. So, and I know Amber is going to feel the same way. She just wants to reach out and to help people to not hurt so bad and not to feel so bad and to regain your life. So what's I'll give you a few minutes here to any kind of closing comments that you want to make today, hon.
Well, I just want to say at this point, you know, in my life, I'm in my late 60s and, you know, I still see patients and I still see people, but I see my goal is really an educator, of teaching people how to do this themselves, you know, because I have all this knowledge and I just want to pass it on. And it's not about money and it's not about, you know, it's not even about me. It's really about the bees and anybody who's struggling with their health. The bees can help them. I have never seen bee venom fail for anything. And I've seen 55,000 patients, you know, so that's a lot of people with a lot of different ailments, you know, and.
Yeah, I agree.
So,
we have one little question here. We've got Tracy on the phone, and Tracy said that didn't want to be part of the conversation today on the call, but now has a question. So I'm going to bring Tracy on real quick and we'll see what the question is. Okay.
Sure.
Hi, Tracy, honey. How you doing?
Hey, Divi. I'm doing a lot better. I'm just 3 weeks in and doing really well already.
Good. I got an IM from you on Facebook that you had a quick question here.
Yes. 2009, breast cancer, had a right mastectomy. Very successful, stage one, didn't do the chemo because of the Lyme. Came back a year later and did reconstructive surgery. And just real quickly, for anybody who doesn't know, they basically made a horizontal incision 3 different times. So I have a major horizontal scar. And I was wondering if I could, it's also, I did it on the torso, but it's a scar. And I have a silicone implant. So can I treat that area with bee strings, or should I stay away from it because of the implant, or is it a good place to go because of the infections you talked about that go inside surgical implants?
I would say after the first month or so, a month and
mm-hmm.
a half, you could try a testing on that area because scars block energy, so it's so important to sting scars. And you're right, you know, I mean, they put something in there that wasn't natural to your body. So, and they cut 3 times. And then before that, you know, there was another cut. So you probably have a lot of internal adhesions as well. So
I'm sure I do.
Yeah, that would be an area that I definitely would go to, but I wouldn't go. You're about 3 weeks in. So
mm-hmm.
I would say maybe in another 3 weeks, you could try, like, just a testing on, like, one spot of the scar. But you know what? Before that, I want you to take a picture of this scar. If you want to, you okay. can, you can.
I'll get it around the side, like the armpit area. I'll get it there. How
yeah,
about that?
You know, take a picture where you feel comfortable, and you can even block some area that you might want to cover with a scarf or something. But
okay.
because it's not necessarily for publication, but if you do it before you sting, and then 6 months down the road, that scar is a lot better, and then you take a picture then, you see, you'll be able to see the difference because you won't necessarily remember what it looked like before. So
right.
this way, if you do before and after pictures, it's sometimes helpful, and you don't have to show it to anybody, just yourself, or maybe your significant other or a friend, family
cool.
member.
So, yeah. but it's okay to sting on top of, like,
yes.
a silicon implant or something. Okay, great.
Let me say this, though. I wouldn't sting right on the breast itself. I would just
okay.
The scar is below it, right?
No, it's across horizontal, right across, and it starts,
right.
you know, it's right across the middle. Like on a clock, it would
nipple.
Be from 3 to 9 o'clock, yes. And it goes into my armpit
oh, okay.
area, the low armpit.
Yeah. Then I would start with the testing in the armpit area.
Okay.
First. I would kind of begin there and focus on that first and kind of see how you do
mm-hmm.
with stinging that area first, because the armpit area has a lot to do with your heart. The first point on the heart pathway is under the armpit, so we want your heart to be circulating well. So I would kind of start there, and then if you were going to do anything on the breast, I would really just start with only one testing, maybe every, you know, maybe once a week or something, just to see how you did. But I would wait another good 3 or 4 weeks, and then I would start with a testing under your armpit, and then
mm-hmm.
I would do maybe, you know, next to it after it's not red anymore, I would maybe do a full sting, or if you're scared and you want to do a 5-minute sting instead of 20 minutes, you know what I'm saying? Like, listen
yeah.
to your. And if your body just says, this doesn't feel good and I want to take it out after 5 minutes, you know, I would listen to your body. So the first time you go anywhere, you do a testing. So you're going to do a testing and then, you know, you
but
can.
But definitely creep.
So definitely
creep slowly here, yeah.
Definitely creeping. Usually in acupuncture, you know, we don't sting on the breast tissue itself because we don't want to puncture anything, you know, but with, you know, the bee sting is so tiny. It's not the same as like a 2-inch or 1-inch acupuncture needle, you know,
okay.
that could go in the hole. You know what I mean? You know what the stinger looks like, so it's very tiny. So it's like a pincer.
Yeah.
It's like a pincer.
Well, the other thing that you can do is you can find the nerve that feeds that area and focus on stinging that. And that
oh.
will help to provide the venom to be targeted into that area.
That's a good tip too.
Yeah.
Yeah, as long as that spine area sting is not too high up on the neck. But I don't have the chart open right in front of me because
yeah.
you guys, I don't have any power right now. The only thing I'm going on is my cell phone, so I can't even internet.
And no worries. Well, I'm going to give you about 30 seconds left, Amber, and we got to close the show, dear.
Okay. Well, I love you all, and, you know, I wish you well, and feel free to join my new group or PM me, Amber Rose, on Facebook, and I'd love to help you. That's all I care about is helping you. That's my goal.
Sounds good, honey. Thank you so much for joining us today. We love you and love your advice. Bye, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this segment.
In the ocean, sending big waves into motion, like how a single word can make a heart open. I might only have one match, but I can make an explosion. All those things I didn't say, wrecking balls inside my brain. I will scream them loud tonight. Can you hear my voice this time? This is my fight song. Take that.